Welcome to Real Vision's Crypto Unwrapped. I'm Ash Bennington. Today, we're doing a special update show during this holiday week to make sure all of our Real Vision subscribers stay in the loop with the smartest analysis during this turbulent Bitcoin market. We've got a dream team here to talk about this. Jim Bianco of Bianco Research and Weston Nakamura from Real Vision. Welcome, guys. So let me just set the stage here on price action. On November 10th, Bitcoin hit an all-time high of over 68,500. That's 50 days ago. Since then, it's not been pretty. Bitcoin dropped to under 46,000 on December 4th, I believe. We saw a max drawdown peak to trough of around 30%. We've recovered a bit since then, and we're trading now at around 47,700 here on Thursday, December 30th at about 2 p.m. Eastern time. So here's what's already been reported. We've got just shy of 130,000 options contracts, 129,800 to be exact, reaching expiry on 31 December 2021. That's tomorrow, Friday, New Year's Eve, end of the year. And that represents more than $6 billion in notional exposure to Bitcoin. So here's the question. What's going on? Is it material? Is it a tempest in a teapot? We're going to break it all down, unpack it, and hash it out in layman's terms. First, over to you, Jim. Jim, what's going on in your view? Obviously, it's been an ugly December.
Yeah, first, Ash, good morning. It has been an ugly December, but if you want to draw a bigger picture, I think this is part of the institutional adoption that we've seen in cryptos all year. There's a lot of institutional players in this market. The most important time frame for an institutional player is the calendar year. So their marks get set tomorrow. A lot of them are positioning themselves because they have to report their portfolios tomorrow, an audited portfolio of what their positions are. And the belief is that they've probably been aggressively playing in these markets and they're paring back their positions a little bit ahead of year end so they can report their positions. And then if that's true, hopefully they'll return to the market in January. So I think when you look at year-end movements like this, first thing you have to think about is the institutional adoption of a market, whether you're talking about traditional stocks or in this case, cryptos, and is that forcing them to do some kind of action? And I think the answer here is yes, and they're probably pulling back a little bit.
Weston, over to you. Jim making some points that you've echoed many times before about year-end portfolio balancing management. What's your take on what's going on? How significant is it? And what are you thinking right now?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with Jim, especially and Ether, especially are getting more and more institutional. And that means, just like Jim says, not just end of year, but end of month, rebalancing, things like that. You know, the price action is going to just become more and more like any other institutional product, be it, you know, commodity futures, stock portfolio, whatever it may be. And then also in terms of market mechanics, things like listed derivatives, OTC derivatives, options, expiry, things like that. With regards to the $6 billion notional in options that's, you know, set to expire at the end of, I guess today for me, tomorrow for you guys. Basically, that isn't really, I don't think that's an event per se. You're talking about $6 billion notional on a, $1 trillion AUM or $1 trillion market cap asset. Granted, not all $1 trillion is trading at all times. I understand that. But at the end of the day, we're heading that, then into January 1st, and you're going to get reallocations and you're going to get, inflows mixed with that. And so it's very tough to discern what's due to sort of this options and like this delta hedging activity roll off and all that and what's not. So I think that this particular options expiry isn't really anything material.
Yeah. To exactly that point, let's take a look at some images here that we were talking about before we went on, just to give people a context of how significant the open interest right now is by expiry. This is based on some original reporting that came out of CoinDesk based on data coming from Skew. What you're looking at right there, that 31 December 2021 expiry, 129,800 contracts. Obviously, you can see that compared to the other expiry dates, it's pretty significant to your point and to Jim's point as well. Moreover, I wanted to take a look at a chart that we were talking about earlier. This is the Bitcoin price action 12 months. You can see that red oval on the right that I've circled there. That's basically this sell-off that we're looking at. So obviously, putting this into a bit of a context relative to the overall price action on the year seems relatively maybe muted might be the right word for it. Not something that is really significant, it looks like, when you look at the broader price action. But let me throw back to Jim. Jim, what are your thoughts about this? Pick up on what Weston said and give us a little bit of a sense of how you're thinking about it.
Yeah, you know, the first thing is when you look at the chart of Bitcoin or any of the major tokens, we're back at the same levels we were at in May. So the market, you know, we're going to hear a lot of narrative about that, you know, ETH is up 400% for the year, Bitcoin's up 60-odd% for the year. A lot of that happened in January. And, yeah, you know, maybe bleeding into February a little bit. And it's pretty much been sideways action ever since. As far as the options trading go, let me diverge a little bit and talk about ETH. Good metric you can look at is gas fees. And gas fees are down a lot. Now, part of that is because the NFT boom has cooled off, a lot of minting of NFTs in the last couple of weeks. But part of that is because the options and futures trading, and again, for those, you know, just to be clear, we're not talking about listed CME options and futures trading. We're talking about on listed exchanges and some decentralized exchanges as well, too, like Perpetual. That trading in those options and futures was much larger in the May crash that we had in crypto. When we had on May 19th, where Bitcoin was down 27% in one day, and from peak to trough sold off 50% in total. So yes, this one is a little bit large, but it still is dwarfing what we saw last May. So bottom line is you're seeing a lot of consolidation in this market for the last 7 or 8 months with a big chop in it. And for those that are in the traditional financial world, remember that this instrument or this space is 10 times as volatile as like the S&P. We've had, and I counted it up right before we had this, we've had in ETH, we've had 37 days this year that it sold off at least 5% during that day. 37. So that's about one every 10 days or so. I know that in the traditional world, whenever they see a 5% sell-off, they get themselves all worked up about it. Well, you're going to get yourself worked up every other week if you're not, if you don't understand the volatility in this space.
Well, that's an excellent point, Jim. And talking about getting yourself worked up, take a listen to this. I'm just looking at a Bloomberg terminal here. This is different time horizons, Bitcoin percent change. One day, we're up 1%. Week to date, minus 6.3%. Month to date, minus 16.5%. 1 year, plus 65%. You know, it gives you a sense of just how volatile this asset class is when you look at it across different time horizons and you see that kind of movement in the price.
Yeah, I agree. And you have to kind of get used to that. And you can't get yourself that worked up. And, you know, by the way, we're talking about Bitcoin. You really want to start trafficking into some of the altcoins and some of the meme coins. You know, you might, the same thing might be said about a 30 or 40% move as opposed to a 5 or 8% move as well, too. That's just the nature of this beast, is this tremendous volatility. And that's why a lot of people that play in this space don't get worked up about it, because they think that this volatility eventually gives way to like a 10x move in a couple of weeks. And there's plenty of examples of that happening. So got to dial in these expectations when you're talking about the crypto space. It is a very volatile space, and you're going to get wild moves like this.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Welcome back to Real Vision's Daily Briefing. Let's get right back to the top analysis of today's markets.
Talking about volatility and how you look at this, Weston, I know you and I were geeking out a little bit earlier in the day, talking about some FX comparisons between emerging market FX, as well as looking at Bitcoin in different bases. Give us a sense of how you're thinking about that right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't say emerging markets. I would say one in particular idiosyncratic case, which would be Turkey and their wonderful lira. So I did a a video on this, or a few of them. But what I said in my video was, so Andrew Bailey earlier this year, he was, you know, Bank of England, governor of Bank of England. He basically said, when he was talking about El Salvador having adopted Bitcoin as their, you know, national currency, saying like basically that's a bad idea because he thinks that the volatility of it doesn't make it suitable for things like, you know, especially like payments and regular use. Well, if Bitcoin is a 70 vol instrument, the Turkish lira at one point last week with this 50% sort of whipsaw move in 30 hours almost doubled the realized volatility of Bitcoin. So if Bitcoin is too volatile for El Salvador, for any country, what does that make the lira that's, you know, 40 vol points higher? So, and the reason I bring up the lira is because there actually is a pretty clear sort of correlation and causation, I believe, with the lira and with the sort of sell-off in Bitcoin that we saw towards the end of the year. You have the glue, basically, is levered Japanese retail. Japanese retail is a significant player in being long the Turkish lira because of, you know, nominal yield spreads at, you know, 20% or more, very small initial margin, things like that. And so they're levered long the lira. They're also long Bitcoin. And then when you get a margin call, you liquidate, you know, your whatever other assets you have, such as Bitcoin, in order to meet those margin calls. And so that's why you see this precipitous drop off in both the lira and Bitcoin sort of simultaneously. And you see kind of almost a tick for tick rebound. And a lot of that is not just the actual retail activity itself, but it's a lot of these sort of systematic flows, ARBs, you know, high frequency that are essentially front running the Japan retail flow in anticipation. Sometimes not just in anticipation, but kind of making it self-fulfilling, you know, by creating the momentum that makes that triggers, you know, the Japan retail to flow to, you know, to exist in the first place and to follow up. So if you just keep an eye on the lira, especially over the last few days or last week or so, you'll see that, you know, there is a pretty close sort of, you know, almost tick for tick movements and price action and behavior. And I believe that they are very much directly related.
Hey, Weston, while we're on Japan, tell us a little bit about your view of BTC JPY and why you look at that as a benchmark instead of BTC USD.
I wouldn't say instead of. My point that I always make to everybody is that Bitcoin is not an American asset. So, like, I know that everyone looks at it as, you know, BTC USD and quotes it at, like, you know, 40,000, 50,000, whatever it is, but this is the most non-global, specific to a country or currency asset that's ever existed, right? This BTC JPY, BTC TRY, BTC BRL, whatever it may be. So people have to get into the habit of not looking at it just in terms of BTC USD, because that's where you get these kind of very like abstract sort of like, yeah, bounced off the 42,182 resistance. what are you talking about? So if you actually look at it from a BTC JPY level, makes your life a lot easier. Bitcoin actually trades very, very obediently to round levels in BTC JPY. So BTC JPY, 6 million that just broke the last one and stopped at 5 million. You know, 5.5 million. So like these 100,000 yen increments, and especially at the round levels, that's where you see these sharp moves, you know, support, resistance, and all that. And it's certainly not from BTC USD 52,142 and $0.46.
You know, Ash, if I could underscore that, there's a fallacy when you talk to Americans, especially when you talk to traditional financial people. Oh, those altcoins or the Bitcoin's going to sell off 50% and it's going to screw all those Gen Zs. Well, first of all, it sells off 50% a couple of times every year. Second of all, they think that everybody that's playing in this space is either at a Starbucks in San Francisco or at a Starbucks in New York City. If you look at chain analysis, they look at crypto adoption by country. There's only one developed country in the top 20 right now, and that's the United States at 9. It's largely a lot of developing countries. It's a lot of Asian countries. Asia is really where all the action is. So unless you want to talk about we're going to really stick it to everybody in Seoul or we're going to stick it to everybody in Indonesia, you got to understand that this is a global market. And Weston being in Japan is a lot closer to the center of who trades this stuff than I am in the middle of the United States. And I think that that's an idea that's lost upon a lot of Americans. We tend to be very American-centric, think that the whole world revolves around us. But in this case, in crypto, it really does start in Asia. That's really where the heaviest adoption is. You can even see it overnight. Go ahead and watch the action in these things, you know, in U.S. terms, you know, at 9, 10, 11 p.m. or midnight, and you'll see a lot more action in those than you would see at noon because of all of the Asian players that are in this market.
Yeah, such important points from both of you about this. Couldn't agree more. Absolutely a totally globalized market.
We're going to take another quick break and be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing. Welcome back to Real Vision's Daily Briefing. Let's get right back to the top analysis of today's markets.
Let me just pivot back here because I wanted to cover a little bit more of what's coming out on the derivatives front, on the options front. Original reporting from CoinDesk about 2 days ago coming out talking about $300 million in liquidations, nearly 80% of which were on the long position side in the futures contracts. Weston, any thoughts about that? How do you think about it? How do you contextualize it? And is it significant in your view when you start reading numbers like that relative to the overall market capitalization of this asset?
That particular statistic, not really. To also just to touch back on what Jim had said, he's absolutely right. Like even see the CME contracts on futures on Bitcoin. Yeah, CME is in Chicago where Jim is, but 40% of CME Bitcoin volume comes from outside the United States. This is, again, it's not even the U.S. listed futures product is not a U.S. product. This is a global asset class. In terms of, you know, what you were saying, like in terms of liquidations. So basically, I think that in a kind of a Q4 sort of wrap up, what you saw was the introduction of these Bitcoin futures backed ETFs, BITO, BTD, I forgot what the ticker for the other one was, the Valkyrie one. But basically, you know, these, they don't hold spot Bitcoin, they hold CME minis and, CME regular Bitcoin futures. And so you saw this like huge open interest spike in CME futures coinciding in October, coinciding with these ETF products being launched. Once that kind of died away, you saw futures volume and open interest drop. So Bitcoin price action drop as well. And so what you're seeing is this like steady decline since, you know, mid to end of October after that sort of initial rush in. And that rush in was not really for Bitcoin demand necessarily. That was more so for, options being traded on BITO itself. So this is basically a derivative of a derivative on top of an ETF. And dealers having to hedge their exposure and needing to open more shares or create more shares of the ETF to do so, which means more open interest in the underlying futures contract and so on and so forth. Either way, my point is that you had this flood in from this ETF product that basically peaked out towards the end of October and then just been on kind of a decline since then. And then you have year-end profit taking, you have technical support and resistance on BTC JPY, things like that. And then you have some options on the underlying itself. And that's just been kind of snowballing on top of each other So a 1 day liquidation or 1 week like liquidation of however many, you know, hundreds of millions is just part of a bigger story of that kind of artificial jump up from the launch of these ETF products.
A riddle wrapped in a mystery inside a derivative. Jim, I saw you nodding there. Jump in.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what we've been talking about this whole conversation is welcome to institutional adoption. And, you know, my rant about this is, and thank you, Weston, for giving me the idea. Satoshi, you just created a 5X S&P ETF is what you've done. That I can look at the I can look at the financial markets and look at the S&P, and I could look at the currency markets, and I could pretty much guess which way the crypto markets are going, up or down. Now, ideally, if we're building a new financial system, we would want them zero correlated to the traditional markets. But as we get this institutional adoption, things like what's happening in Turkey, what the stock market's doing, Fed policy, the state of inflation, matters to these markets as much as it matters to the other markets. And like I've said, at times I get frustrated and I say, well, you know, why am I playing in this space? I could just go buy triple levered ETFs in a margin account, and I could pretty much accomplish the same thing that I do when I buy cryptos. So hopefully at some point they will break free and become kind of, you know, march to their own drummer. That's not going to happen anytime soon. But in the long run, if you think we're creating a new currency or a new financial system, it has to. It just can't. Otherwise, it's just part of the same old system, and that's not good. So a lot of this stuff that's happening in the financial world does matter, and you have to take that into account. That essentially, if you're thinking you're going to protect yourself by being in cryptos, if because the stock market might crash or interest rates might soar or the dollar might do this or that, I guess again, it'll probably impact cryptos just as much as it impacts the traditional markets.
I love closing out the year on a cynical note with a tinge of optimism. We've got about 1 minute left, 30 seconds from each of you. Weston, final thoughts as we close out the year here on crypto.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jim, if you want an uncorrelated asset, there's something called gold. Take a look at that.
It's uncorrelated. It's uncorrelated because it doesn't do anything.
Exactly.
And that's not what everybody wants.
Yeah. So if you want something that doesn't correlate with the S&P, this is something good. Look up gold futures is right in your backyard. So my final thought is basically, if you look back at 2021, it's actually been pretty incredible, but you really do have to look, it is important to look at, you know, things like, Glassnode and so on and so forth, but you do have to look cross asset because it is becoming more and more institutionalized. You have to look at other currencies. You have to look at what meme stocks are doing. You have to look at the options activity on that. You have to look at just the S&P in general, or the price action. Is it risk on or risk off or whatever it may be? You have to pay attention to it. Like there's a narrative about how it's not there's no correlation or it's not, it's decorrelated from it's separate from the system. But that's just a story. The fact of the matter is that it's glued together because we all cross hold these assets together. And if you get a margin call or if you need liquidity, you're going to sell things. And if you have extra liquidity, you're going to buy things. And so, my point is that, 2021 was you just saw asset after asset, just kind of, stepping into the spotlight to like what's going to be correlated with Bitcoin and what's not, and kind of in and out, and that's going to continue. So just keep an eye cross asset. This is why you have to understand both TradFi and the DeFi markets simultaneously.
Jim, that's the perfect setup to you to close it out.
Yeah, 21 was a year of incredible innovation and adoption. Look, 365 days ago, nobody was talking about NFTs, and now NFTs are the next big thing. We were still basking in the glory of DeFi summer in 2020. We're already on the DeFi 2.0 as well too. Layer one chains like Solana in the West, they were bit players a year ago. Now they're dominant players right now. I expect you're going to see more of the same in 22. And I think the big event coming in 22 should be early on, maybe at the end of the first quarter. And that's going to be one. Ethereum pulls off the Herculean effort of going from proof of stake proof of work to proof of stake. And once they get that done and they finish off with the merge so that everybody's on proof of stake, I think that's going to be the bull event of the first half of 22. I think in my mind, all the ERC-20 tokens, all the ERC-1155 NFTs are all being held back somewhat because this is an incredible high stakes game they're playing here. It needs to be done by going to proof of stake. This is a $500 billion asset. And if there's any kind of a problem with it, it's going to have significant ramifications around everything. If they pull it off, I think it really opens it up. You know, the traditional financial world will have a new look at Ethereum. It's proof of stake now. The whole idea about this energy thing with ESG makes everybody start looking at Ethereum. And so a lot of stuff will change. So hopefully we can get through, you know, to proof of stake in the merge, and that can really open everything up. The other buzzword we look at is they're going to move on to sharding after that, which is going to hopefully increase the throughput and help lower transaction costs or gas fees as well too. So hopefully 1 year from today, proof of stake is well in the rearview mirror. It was a success. Sharding probably won't be ready in a year, but we'll be where we are right now with proof of stake. We'll be talking about it coming, and we'll be talking about this idea of massive scaling of Ethereum, lowering the gas fees, unleashing a lot more of its potential. Because right now, I think its potential is being choked by two things: high transaction costs or gas fees. And the other one is this uncertainty about this major event coming maybe 3 months away, which is the merge with proof of stake.
Jim Weston, a great conversation. I'm glad we got to do this here at the end of the year. Thank you both for joining us. Happy holidays to both of you. And thank you, everyone, for watching Real Vision in 2021. I think you just got a preview of everything that we're going to be hearing about on Real Vision Crypto in 2022. Thanks again for watching.